Hey friend, you're listening to the Jubilee Freedom and Shalom podcast.
If you want to help us make more episodes and do more Shalom projects, please go to patreon.com/Jubilee Freedom Shalom. That's all one word, Jubilee Freedom Shalom, and make a pledge to support the show.
Thank you so much for spending your day with us, and we hope you enjoy this episode about declaring Jubilee, finding true freedom, and experiencing Shalom.
Now here we go.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Jubilee Freedom and Shalom podcast. I'm Daniel. I'm here with Nate, finally here. Well, if you're listening, you might hear finally here and think like, yeah, you dudes haven't uploaded an episode in like 10 years. What's going on? So there's that we have to apologize for. Life's crazy. But also just today, this has been about an hour in the making. Trying to record an episode together. Nate is in Nashville right now, and it's -1 outside with a -20 wind chill, and has spent the morning trying to make sure chickens don't die on his watch. And the power went out in the church building, and
yeah,
the smoke vents that
These emergency vents that open up if like the power goes out in case it's like because of a fire. Just started blasting like -1 degree into the church building.
It's good.
And
it's good.
I use this little thermostat. So basically, it's just a little block that you plug in, and anytime it hits below 45, it turns on your heaters and stuff, like your heat lamps for the chickens. Yeah. And I don't know why, but last night after the temp dropped, it started snowing. I was like, I'm just going to make sure, you know, all that's still on. It was it's pitch dark. And I was like, oh, no. And so, thankfully, I just had to unplug that block. It failed, and just plug them straight in. But a couple of things have tried to get me.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
You would have gone out there. How many chickens do you have right now?
Probably 20.
Yeah, they would have all been dead.
Yeah, I mean, they are pretty good at staying warm, but this is just wild. It dropped so fast. We were in the 50s yesterday, and now it's down to -1. So
yeah, that's wild.
That is intense.
That is
so. I think they're calling it a bomb cyclone.
That's what I heard. Arctic blast.
Arctic blast. It's some kind of like mix between a tornado and a blizzard. So whatever that means.
It sounds like the sequel to Sharknado or something. Like
yeah,
that.
The bomb cyclone.
The bomb cyclone. There's so polar bears.
But yeah, we were about to sit down and record, and all the electricity in the church building just went ew.
Yeah, of course it did.
We almost gave up on it, but here we are, and we're back. Excited to talk about whatever we are going to talk about today.
Yeah, so we've been talking about a couple different things. We actually, the last episode, we recorded one that isn't going to get posted because internet issues, connectivity. We just are having a lot of issues, so we're trying some new stuff right now. But
yeah,
so that episode is gone to... is in the cloud somewhere and is never going to exist. But before that, we've been talking about different cult documentaries and some different stuff that just because we had watched a bunch in a row, both of us, and had a lot of conversations together while we were on vacation together in Florida. And it just kind of produced some thoughts because, you know, we're going to come back around to that because there are some things we want to, some loose ends maybe we want to draw up. But today, we wanted to talk about an experience that Nate had and some things that he learned recently at the Tennessee. I get it wrong every time.
Local Food Summit.
Local Food Summit. I always want to call it the Tennessee Food Bank, but that's like not what it is at all.
Yeah.
So yeah, tell us a little bit about where you learned about this thing happening and your experience.
Yeah. So we, if you want to look up the Tennessee Barefoot Gardener, I forgot his real name, but if you can look that up while I'm introing this, the Tennessee Barefoot Gardener. But anyways, back up one step. Me and Rachel just felt like, you know, sometimes with the gardening stuff and some of the stuff we're really interested in, we don't always feel like everyone we go to church with is super excited about that, which not mad at them for it. Gardening is not everyone's cup of tea. But we just thought we should start purposefully trying to show up to places where people are really passionate about the same stuff we want to be passionate about here at Madison. Yeah. And so,
and there's a lot of that happening in Nashville.
Yeah. And so we just thought, okay, let's instead of trying to make people that have never heard about permaculture or Jubilee or Freedom or Shalom, you know, all that stuff, let's go hang with the people who are already 100% for that and on their own are doing a bunch of big work towards those end goals that we are, so we can stay inspired and stay excited and not feel kind of like alone or start questioning yourself, like, is this actually very important?
Right.
So that's why we signed up for the conference.
Cool.
And, so the guy, do you know the guy's name?
I think it's Jeff Poppin.
Poppin. So he started this a while back. He's on like our local PBS, but he never wears shoes like anywhere. He's usually wearing like overalls and like rolled up, you know, button up sleeves. Mm-hmm.
The dirtiest white beard.
Yeah. Like a big dread in his beard and big wire rim glasses. And so he's just kind of a character and he's got his little TV show, but he's all about, restorative agriculture, like doing agriculture in a way that actually builds things instead of, you know, takes away.
Right.
So that sounds like Shalom to me and Jubilee to me.
Totally.
So,
yeah.
Regenerative agriculture is what they call it. So he started this like years ago. I'd never been before. And when I got there, I just ran into a bunch of other people around Nashville doing community gardens and just farms, organic farms and stuff.
Yeah.
There was a class that was talking about just how much farmland Tennessee's losing right now. We're the second worst in the whole U.S., I think second to Texas.
Do they have numbers on where all that's going?
Yeah, just to development. It's just being plowed down and built on. And so we're just seeing it rapidly. And in living around Nashville, I can speak from experience. Like there's just, and we're not very thoughtful about our construction either. We're not saving old trees or anything. We're like, there's a 300-acre farm in Antioch that was the last 100-plus-year-old farm, century-old farm.
They
literally, I swear, there's not one plant, not one plant left. And, it's just so sad to drive by on the interstate and just see that whole stretch just gone. And on top of that, they were also talking about religious organizations, you know, especially the church in North America. I might be wrong, but I think it was the church in America owns over like 400 million acres.
Yeah.
And less than 1% of it is under production.
Yeah.
And so... I looked up
the Catholic Church by itself owns, and this is a worldwide stat, so it's not super helpful, but I was just curious about even more specific stats on that. So just the Catholic, like officially the Catholic Church owns 177 million acres of land in the world.
Okay. Yeah.
And some of that is actually forest land that they own and some like retreats and,
right.
They have some farmland and stuff, but again, like very small percentage versus what is developed or just a big lawn to be mowed or something.
Right. So we're talking about that. It was very convicting and obviously people need somewhere to live. So I'm not against that. But kind of the worst situation possible is really low density housing, which for example, would be like someone having like a 10-acre lot with like one house on it and just a 10-acre lawn that they mow and none of it's under production. So that's just using a lot of fossil fuels and stuff to maintain it. You're not getting anything out of it. And, you know, only maybe 5 people live on that whole property. So I understand people having like kind of hobby farms that aren't really hobby farms is kind of the worst of both worlds. And what I was telling Daniel is like, I've really been thinking about this kind of hard. And in general, we've just kind of wanted to return back to these episodes being like, okay, let's refocus on Jubilee, Freedom, Shalom. Like, what does that look like? What does that mean? And so I think for us, you know, so I see like a non-Shalom scenario of just like farms getting torn down and this every living thing on it being just bulldozed. And you're like, okay, what do we do with that? So on one hand, I'm like, don't, just stop. But then, you know, people do need somewhere to live. And so I got to reckon that. And I think where I've come to is I was watching a couple documentary, you know, short pieces, like mini docs on YouTube about, I think it's mostly in Norway and Sweden. They're starting to come up with technology where, and I've seen this for the risers for windmills as well, being made out of wood instead of metal. So obviously most skyscrapers are, you know, steel and glass and concrete. Right. And so they are cross laminating lumber. So you got the grain that runs one way and then they have the, you know, glued cross laminated, however many times they have to do that. There's two types of that cross lamination and another one that allows them, I think, to go up to like 40 or 50 stories now in wood instead of steel. And then, you know, you still clad everything with glass, but it's still, it's really beautiful. I don't know why, you know, so, but they leave the wood exposed because it's really beautiful. And it's, right, you know, if you have an apartment, you see these huge wooden beams in your apartment and stuff. And I don't know, it's just a really cool technology they're coming out with. And it made me start thinking about, okay, if the worst of both worlds is a piece of property that is not in production and is low density housing.
Right.
If those are the worst things, then I think we need to do, like, unless you are someone who is in production on your land. So that would be like, okay, if you're, if it's low density housing, but there's production on the land, then that's allowable. Or it needs to be no production and high density housing. You know what I mean? It needs to be one or the other.
Right.
And I do think you can do some blend of, like, I've seen some neighborhoods in California that, you know, purposely put a lot of green space and, like, food forest and productive plants, like, in the common spaces of the, you know, this kind of a suburban neighborhood-ish
right
type place. So I get that a little bit, but I think the best case scenario would be to, let's say you build a wooden skyscraper, and for every story tall that it is, you have to put like 20 acres in conservation or in production for those people. So instead of Nashville being just like a blanket, as far as I can see, of just like, you know, 1,500 square foot houses and little bitty roads running everywhere and every impermeable surface, like, you know, that street to that neighborhood, you know, has to drain to somewhere. And it's typically just going to go right down the sewer drain and out to the Cumberland River and down to the Gulf of Mexico. So it's not really recharging our groundwaters. It's not really, you know, if we're in the summertime, we may get a big rain and, you know, 3 or 4 days later, just be bone dry and back in a drought. And so I think what we should do is actually build skyscrapers and put green space, land under conservation or production around them, to where you, Nashville is instead just a series of these small, or sorry, these skyscrapers that have people densely populated in there, but they have green, like hundreds of acres around them. So on a 50 acre, it would be 50 times 20 acres of, you know, green space around there. And then you just have one street going to the next, you know, high rise one, high rise two, high rise three. And we don't have to have all these side roads and all this other stuff that, you know, that just creates more upkeep and maintenance. Our electricity grid would be a lot more simple because it's going to one place instead of, you know, say if you had 2,000 households represented in that skyscraper, that'd be 2,000 driveways and roofs and foundation, you know, whatever, all piping, electricity, all that kind of stuff. I understand those, like, inside the building, those things would still exist, but to transmit to all those places would just be a lot more simple. And also,
the only thing that I think you'd have to think about is, which this is obviously what you're thinking, but I think you kind of work backwards. So you build a 50 story skyscraper or whatever.
Yeah.
50 times 20 is being either it's in conservation or it's being produced. I think most people, their mind goes to the type of production that's like, basically rip the land of all the nutrients over time kind of production, like big company trying to just get as much out of the land as they possibly can kind of production. I think you'd have to be really careful about who you give that land to and how it's produced, because then you're just working backwards. You're not moving forward.
They also said a stat at the food summit that only 3% of land in America is being used in a regenerative ag way. The land that is under production, only 3% of that's doing it in the regenerative agriculture way. So, I think, that the math is 1,000 acres. I thought it was 1,000, but I didn't want to say the wrong thing. think I was dumb. But I think, just imagine these high rises that just, I would call them skyscrapers, that just rise up, just glass and wood, and the lights just rise up out of the forest. And, there would be green trails, green walking, green ways, whatever you call them. They would just go out from those buildings and people could be right just surrounded by, this huge park.
Yeah.
Some of it would be used to produce food for those people, but also, just think about, let's say you did want to compost and you did want to get, if you believe that, energy is never destroyed.
Just changing
forms. Then you're like, okay, so this trash that we throw away, unless it's plastic, glass, the recyclable stuff, anything that I can eat, a worm can eat, turn it back into dirt, put it back out on plants, So all of our napkins, all of our paper products, as long as they're not, glossy, cardboard, all this stuff could be fed back into the compost and could go back to feed people. But in the system we have now, that has to be shipped back out to the farmer if it ever really even finds its way out to the farmer. And I just think if people aren't going to be productive with the ground, then just give up the lawn, give up all that stuff, and just like imagine having a 50 story view of just a huge forest, out your window instead of having to keep up with all this stuff. And I think we could cut down on a lot of food miles because we can deliver. I would think there would be a basement of parking, garage. The first two stories would be like retail, grocery stores, all the stuff retail we need. And then above that would be a residential.
Yeah.
And I think we could do a lot better at being efficient, with electricity and water and all composting together and having just chutes, that go down just like you have your trash chute, but you have your organic waste chute. And there could be, a composting program down in the basement using, red wiggler worms or whatever way you want to do that to turn it back into dirt and get it back out to people who are growing. And then, like you said, I know that this will never happen on a government level. Like, I get that. But I think if we are going to develop land and build these really uninspiring houses that are not going to last very long, it's like, why not? Let's just do it big and build beautiful big buildings and condense every one down to not have to just think of if everyone's on a quarter acre or a half acre, it's just enough to where you have to work to keep it up and not enough to actually, like, you're not having some huge party or like, you're not going to enjoy like an actual big green space. You're allowing people probably to like kind of potentially, kind of trash their yards and have a bunch of extra stuff they don't really need laying around. It's just like, I think if you put that all in a skyscraper instead, it would just keep, there'd be a lot less HOA arguments because it's not like, oh, they have the wrong color, awning on the back of their house and all that kind of stuff. It's like, your whole house is just going to be the inside where people don't get to see that unless you invite them in. So,
right. I do think too, there's some of that stuff that, when everyone's living in their own single family house, I think it becomes a whole lot more difficult to get people to say yes to some of that stuff. So like the composting thing, for example, if everyone's living in their own single family home, I don't know of a ton of places that have a compost pickup service like trash. And right. So what you're asking people to do is collect their own compost and then go take it somewhere. Same problem with recycling. It's just like, if you don't have it picked up already, if there's not a truck that comes and does it right at the end of your driveway, like you can't ask people to do more than walk 20 feet down their driveway. So I think if you consolidate all of that into a high density skyscraper, then all you're asking people to do is like, yeah, when you take your trash to the chute, you take your organic waste there and maybe you get a credit on your rent or something like that, or you get your utilities get prorated or something based on the amount of organic waste that you give us. And so I would do great because I drink so much coffee. I'd be just dumping coffee grinds down that chute just like all day long. But you know, then it would also encourage people to eat more vegetables and cook at home and stuff. Cause you know, I can get my water bill down to $2 because of how many vegetables I'm throwing out after eating, you know, throwing out like apple banana peels and apple cores and stuff like that.
Right.
So there's some of that stuff. And then when it comes to, you know, who's going to maintain all of that space, I think that if you're doing a high rise building like that, I think there are people that would be willing to operate like a composting service for one of these skyscrapers or maintain a farm that delivers directly all the land that grows food around the skyscraper delivers their produce to the grocery store that's in the skyscraper that immediately gets eaten by these people and just keeps cycling.
Yeah.
And I think what you offer those, like Emily and I would do that 100%. That would be so much fun. And I think you and Rachel would feel the same way. If there was a skyscraper, some private company or whatever that says you can live in our building for free and we'll also pay you a little bit extra to run our farm here and produce food in a regenerative way. And any deficit that we end up having, if we just have a bad season or something, we can always, you know, bring in because it's, you know, it'd be like a Publix or something. But as long as y'all are producing what you can produce, like we'll let you live here for free and you get to like do this for a living. Basically, everything's covered for you basically.
Right.
And maybe we just stash some money away in a Roth IRA or a 401k for you, but all of your daily needs, like here's a card, you can shop at the grocery store for free. You get to live here for free. All your utilities are paid for.
Right.
And you basically let everyone else function and do their jobs and go out and do whatever they do for a living. And you're essentially making this place livable for them and taking all of their compost and converting it into dirt and keeping this place regenerative. And you're helping us find solutions for, you know, maybe even starting to capture gray water or rainwater and using that and all this kind of stuff.
Oh yeah. I mean, you could just think about if you could, if you rig the building to do all the things, I would imagine that, like I said, down the basement, there would be a methane digester that takes all the toilet waste that gets eaten by bacteria. They burp out methane. That methane can go to heat the building or to generate electricity down in the basement. All the water, you know, like you said, with gray water systems, and then have a wetland system, you know, where that is once it's gone through certain, you know, sanitary marks, then it can go out to the wetlands, because that's a natural part of what wetlands do, and so on and so forth. You make a food forest, so people will be like, "Well, I need a yard. I need to see nature." It's like, "Oh, you'll get more nature than you'll ever get at this dumb neighborhood."
Yeah,
you'll totally. Have 1,000 acres. That's like, it's all yours.
Free use. Do what you want to do.
And you know, a lot of that we would plant as food forests, where it's not just like oak trees and acorns. Like, it would be stuff that you could be walking around and seeing, you know, fruit form and drop all the time that you could harvest and bring into your home, and just that would just be a passive, you know, food supply for you. But yeah. You know, that would be outside of the, you know, the produce person or the, you know, the people that are running animals, which they may run animals through the food forest every once in a while, but it would be an regenerative program where, you know, there may be pigs being grazed through the forest, you know, in the fall where all the acorns are dropping, and that's cool. And that would be, that bacon will be at your local, you know, grocery store soon, but
real tasty.
Yeah. But it'll all be in a regenerative way. And I feel like that would be a pretty baller program. Cause if you had all that stuff, like in Nashville, there actually is a guy, it's a private company that he gives you this green bin. It's a little like 5 gallon bucket, basically.
Yeah.
Fancier 5 gallon bucket.
For compost.
And he gives it to you for compost. And, and he comes around and picks it once a week, and he's trying to make that feasible on all that driving and all that moving around. That's what makes his margin really razor thin, is making that a viable business. But if you had, you know, 1,000 families that were dropping it down a chute into one place, that you actually have a really valuable product that's all being accumulated basically passively. And you have it all in one place, and you cut that piece of having to drive all over town and pick up these little 5 gallon buckets of, you know, organic waste.
And you cut the piece of people think it's gross.
Yeah. I mean, just
cause you just keep their mind in the, this is trash. It's just a different kind of trash. And then you just send them send them a report like, "Hey, thanks for living here. And yeah, you gave us this much organic waste, and we just want you to know it created this much dirt, we, you know, estimate."
Right.
"And we planted this many plants in that cubic feet of dirt that you created from your organic waste this year. Thanks for being a part of this."
Yeah, this is how much. Yeah, you could keep stats on it very easily. And anyway, so I think if you had this building that is very close to the agriculture that also feeds those people, there'd be a really interesting relationship with that, because I seriously doubt any of us that live in, you know, major metropolitan areas actually know the human's name that grew our food for us. Like, that's pretty rare.
Unless you just exclusively shop at farmers markets.
Yeah. And depending on the farmers market, if they have really strict rules. But like, some farmers markets allow you to bring up, you know, stuff from Florida or, you know, whatever.
Right,
it's not actually even from the state.
Yeah.
Now some of ours are like, "Well, that's dumb. That's not the point of this." And you're like,
"Right.
I'm glad that they're realizing
somebody
that
has some reason."
But they're like, you know, at the same time, you can't get tomatoes in Tennessee in February.
And right. So if you're going to get
them, like, "Well, where are we going to get our tomatoes in February?" And you're like, "Well, we'll figure that out."
Got to go to Kroger.
Yeah. We can do some workarounds on some of that. But I do think that if you set up an HOA for this skyscraper that had permaculture principles underpinning all the rationale behind it, you could build something really cool out of that and leave a lot of land undemolished.
So I want to bring up another place that you told me about that you went and toured. We can talk more about it in a second, but there's, if you're listening and you want to look this up, I looked it up. It is super cool. And Emily and I want to go stay here at some point, but it's called South Hall Farm. It's in Franklin, Tennessee. It's relatively new.
Yeah.
I'm sure they've been building it for
years,
seven or 8 years or something.
And they're still, they're opening up right now, but it's still, they're still putting some final touches on.
So in short, it's a 400 acre farm. Right?
Yeah.
With an inn that sleeps 300 or 400.
Yeah.
Two restaurants with full-time chefs.
Yeah.
Like not janky restaurants, like good restaurants.
Yeah, luxury restaurants.
And then a bunch of like the night, I mean, you can go look at the pictures if you're listening. Just go to their website. You can see they have, their greenhouses are nice glass greenhouses. They've got a greenhouse that has a pool to float lettuce and all that kind of stuff. They've got
hydroponic lettuce, yeah.
Yep, hydroponic lettuce. They've got other hydroponic stuff, I think Emily was seeing.
Yeah.
Anyways,
they've got a greenhouse just for citrus and other stuff. Yeah.
And, but their whole, where they make most of their money is the restaurants and the inn.
Right.
And if you go look at it, it is a luxury resort. And I actually think they call themselves that. I think they say it's like a luxury farm or something like that, which is just a hilarious sentence. Yeah. Wendell Berry would laugh at that. But, I think they're hitting on something. We can talk about the details of that in a second, but I just want to bring that up because I think they're hitting on something that is really interesting that you kind of brought up, you and Rachel talking about going to this, the local food summit and stuff, made me think about, you know, with this skyscraper idea is instead of what you end up doing with the skyscraper and what they're doing at South Hall, instead of having to convict everybody that we should all live on the land and, you know, grow our own food and, you know, you should turn all your poop into, you know, something and turn all your pee into something right. and like, don't waste anything.
Right.
People are like, ew, gross.
Yeah.
Instead like, of having to convince everybody of that.
It's like, you just don't worry about it, man. We'll take it from here.
Yeah, we got it.
Like.
Just drop it where it normally goes. We'll take it from there. I think what you end up doing with these skyscrapers, if you just look up wooden skyscrapers like Norway or something like that, there are some that are currently built, I think. And then there's some just like sketches of them. But anyways, all that to say, what South Hall is hitting on is, and what you could do with the skyscraper is make it a comfortable and beautiful and somewhat not luxurious, like, overly expensive, but just like a nice place to live. You build this skyscraper that ends up being like really comfortable and just as good as any other, you know, high level condo unit you would ever build in Nashville. But instead it's got a whole different mission to it. And I think what you end up doing with that is you get a lot of people to agree to something that in principle you can probably convince them of, but that they would never want to do for themselves. Because the other thing is, you know, I think about like my dad. My dad is a lawyer. He grew up going, his family had a farm and he loves living on a farm. He did that every summer when he was growing up. But he's never going to be a farmer.
Yeah.
And he needs to be a lawyer. Like he got training for that. We need lawyers. He should be a lawyer. Same thing with like, you know, I have a cousin who's a doctor, an anesthesiologist. Like, we need her. We need her to do her thing. And so those types of people are doing good work, and they actually don't have the bandwidth or the capacity to then grow all of their own food in a way that would be really helpful and beneficial and regenerative and all that kind of stuff. Like to convince them of basically taking on a second job of maintaining all of their land to be producing for them is to ask a lot. So instead you say, hey, don't worry about it. Just move into our skyscraper. It's super comfortable. It's not sketchy in any way. Any of the stuff that you think is kind of gross about what we're doing, you won't even see it. You won't smell it. You don't have to worry about it.
All happens behind the scenes.
But what you'll know is that the food that you're getting at the supermarket down on the second floor was grown here. All this green space, you can go walk around it. It's just free for you. You can pull apples off of those trees and make an apple pie. You know that all of this space is being taken care of in a way that's regenerative and restorative, and that this place is actually like a self-sustaining community almost.
Right.
And I think that there are a lot of people that would be into that. And even in the retail down there, as simple as having a restaurant, kind of like South Hall is doing, having a restaurant that uses stuff that's produced on this land, It's like, yeah, my skyscraper has a restaurant that makes dishes based on what is being produced out in the 1,000 acres around my skyscraper.
Right. Yeah, because
just like, what the heck? That would be so crazy.
Yeah, I mean, and like I said, it's not as small scale as your backyard, and it's decentralized. Everyone, you know, farm, you know, having a micro farm in the backyard, but
right.
I think it does bring some stability to, you know, if I had a, like, let's say I had an aquarium and I had to keep it a certain temperature. If I had, 50 aquariums that are 20 gallons and they're all kind of out by themselves, the temperature on those could fluctuate really easily. But if sure. I had 1,000 gallon, you know, tank instead, like the thermal inertia of that is just harder to change the temperature of. And yeah. That's for good or for bad. Like if things go sideways, or if things, if we wanted to heat it up, it takes longer. But also if we wanted to keep it from getting cold, you know, and something, the electricity goes out, it's going to hold its temperature longer.
Right.
So I think it's kind of a nice hybrid between those two, where it's like, you know, your dad can still be a part of that system and not be the person doing it, but he can be very directly tied to it. He can know that guy's name or that girl's name. You know, he could be, you know, walking and past and visiting and seeing it, you know, happen.
Yeah.
You know,
and benefit from the system and contribute to the system just by like existing.
Right. And he can be still a part of that process and, yeah. and be knowledgeable of it. And I think as we're knowledgeable of it, we can also be a little more thoughtful about, oh, this isn't, you could also know the plight of the farmer. Of just like, oh, these people aren't getting treated very well. Like, what are we doing here? And,
yeah.
You know, I'm getting my food for really cheap, and maybe that's I'm not really winning because
right.
I realize it's like affecting people in really negative
people
ways.
People are dying to grow these avocados.
Yeah. So
literally dying.
And so I think we can, here's another thing. I think we could actually do all the electricity on site too, because yeah. There's some really interesting. So have you heard of like, you know, plants, it's called solar saturation. Like plants can only take so much sunlight before they are like at max peak capacity. You know, like they're making as much sugar as possible off photosynthesis. Right. And after that, it's just extra heat, extra sun. Mm-hmm. And that's when they start to respirate out, you know, water to keep them cool. Just like we sweat, they mm-hmm. start putting off water, and that's when they start burning through a ton of water. And so a lot of plants are oversaturated in the summertime, especially, and that's why they require so much water. But they've been doing this, these hybrid, like where basically you have solar panels and rows of crops and solar panels and rows of crops.
Okay. It's
where you get both solar power, and they let enough sun, they're spaced enough to let, you know, the plants get what they need, but they actually, you know, if it goes beyond their solar saturation, you know, it just turns into solar electricity instead of food. And it's just so neat. And there's even a new thing recently where they, instead of putting the panels, you know, to where they're facing the sun, like horizontal or, you know, pitched a little bit to the sun and casting a large shadow down, those solar panels do a peak in the middle of the day, right? So when it's noon, it's right. like really hot, the most electricity. A lot of people actually need their solar electricity on, you know, in the morning when they're getting ready for work, and at night when they're like
dark.
Cooking dinner, and
especially in the winter, you know, it's dark and you're cooking dinner and all that.
Right. So actually they've been doing experiments with two-sided solar panels that actually face up and down.
Okay.
And they get sun in the morning from one side and sun in the evening from the other. And they actually have peaks in the morning, and they kind of flatline in the middle and then have a peak at night or in the evening when people actually are using that electricity right. more. And in that program, having solar panels are straight up and down, that's even better for the plants. So I think sure. you could, with some of these agriculture meat, green energy systems, you know, I think you could do all together. You could do a mixture of all these things, and really there's a lot to explore there. And I think there's some good news waiting for us, like in that in those experiments. I don't think we've maxed or even come close to maxing out the potential combinations of some of those things.
No, because I think about, you know, taking it back to like Jubilee, Freedom, Shalom. I do think there's a lot about, there's a lot to be learned in so many ways from the story of the Tower of Babel in the Bible. I'm talking about a group of people getting together, and the problem was not that they all gathered together. It was what they decided to do with that concentrated mass of people trying to make a name for themselves, trying to make themselves great as opposed to operating under God's wisdom. And so God scatters them. And so, you know, whatever they were doing, who knows? I mean, you look at like the pyramids, or you look at any of these remarkable technological things that humans have accomplished. If you gather a group of people together, I think that you, if this is what we started to focus on, I think you actually end up being able to accomplish a lot if you operate under wisdom that brings Jubilee, Freedom, and Shalom. And in our opinion, we're convicted that that's God's wisdom. And so if the whole thing is geared towards like everyone here is going to live comfortably, healthy, and everything that we do is going to be restorative and regenerative. We're not going to enslave anyone or anything. We're not going to become the master of anything or anyone. Like this is freedom that we're going to have here. We're going to declare Jubilee on this plot of land that we're on. And actually what people will start to experience, they'll love living there because it'll be beautiful. Two, it'll be really comfortable and enjoyable. And three, I think they'll start to get a taste of what Shalom could be, because they'll start to realize that like everything that I'm doing here and just existing here because of how people have set this up is going somewhere. Like every day I wake up, I'm moving the ball forward. So some ball is getting moved forward just by me waking up and using the bathroom
right,
or like taking a shower or whatever.
And that's the hope, right? That instead of seeing these things as stuff that we've got to deal with in a bad way, we see it as an exciting, you know, new resource to use. And I don't know, like I've said before on here, if you see the waste that comes out of your body as something to just like throw away and get away as soon as possible, which I understand because there are very real sanitary, you know, problems that can come out of not dealing with it well. And we should be thankful for, you know, indoor plumbing and all that. I'm not that down on that. I'm just saying that if you take energy and you throw that energy away out of your system and out of your loop, you have to spend time trying to find money to replace that energy.
Right.
And the way the energy goes around our circle right now is that we, you know, we try to monetize and then we use that money to find the thing that we're lacking. So that's just going to take, it's going to take a lot of time and a lot of your life trying to fill that hole in the bottom of the bucket because you're not willing to use, you know, that resource and just you're throwing stuff away.
Yeah.
So I think you could build a skyscraper in a permaculture way and it would be pretty beautiful because, I mean, I guess the idea is that everyone just has their own garden and is doing everything super decentralized. We have to deal with the practicality that people aren't and
yeah,
people don't. And,
yeah,
and that's okay. I'm not down on that. I just,
right.
Like if that's just not where we're at, like people, like, you know, your dad or a doctor, or like, yeah, like those are really important things that need to be done. And that doesn't leave time to grow enough calories for you and your family. I guess the only way to get around all that is if one day we do have generally intelligent robots that can tend a garden for us and cook for us and,
right.
And do all that behind the scenes.
Yeah.
To close that loop on a small scale. But I don't think humans are ever going to be that. I don't think we can teach them or educate or equip, because I love this stuff and I still get lazy with it because I have a full-time job that I also have to do.
Sure.
And because of that, I have to realize, like, if I'm super passionate about this and I still have trouble, like, closing those loops in my own life, I shouldn't expect that from someone who's just, you know, doesn't know much about the subject. So
right.
I think the only thing that could get, like you said, it's either the skyscraper model where it just all happens behind the scenes and you just get to be proud of, like, I signed up to buy an apartment in that building.
Yeah.
Or it's got to be done by an entity that we don't yet have at our fingertips.
Right.
Like
right.
a robot that can yeah. just know how to garden and cook for us and, you know, do the laundry.
So. Yeah. So in your head, where, I guess, kind of walk through the logic of how this accomplishes Jubilee Freedom and Shalom.
I think that the freedom, I think the Jubilee would basically be declared over that land put in conservation, where it's just like, you don't have to be our slave and be treated that way. Mm. And because of that, we would, in a way, be declaring Jubilee on ourselves. Then with the freedom that would come is that we are not, just all the taxing things we have to do to uphold a suburban life of all the electric lines, all the, the cable and internet stuff, the sewage, you know, just all the infrastructure and road and things that our tax dollars go to, you know, I think it would bring the cost of living down pretty significantly. I think it would be really slim and lean and efficient. And I think with that efficiency, like we've talked about before, would breed opportunities that right now are not really viable because you'd have to drive all over town to collect people's waste and stuff. Right. And that's just not viable.
Right. Like, we don't actually know what a 2,000 person skyscraper building producing compost would actually accomplish.
Yeah, I think we,
like, I think we actually don't even know.
Yeah, there'd be a lot of efficiencies and good things that would come out of that because it's lean. And yeah. And all those, like, resources.
How much methane we could right. convert into, you know, all sorts of stuff.
Right. And so I think getting people that close to the land, like, I think people would be healthier. I think people would go outside more often. I think that they would be more connected to their local farmer and ag people.
Well, I think even mentally, emotionally.
Yeah, mentally, emotionally, physically, they'd be healthier people. And I think all that adds up to a Shalom result of just happy, healthier, more grounded people. And also just, I don't know, community is a few feet away, you know, and I think right now everything's so spread out. Like, even if you live in Madison, you don't necessarily go to the Kroger in Madison. Mm. You know, someone may go down to Inglewood this way. Someone may go up to Goodlettsville that way because those Krogers are nicer than ours. So you're not necessarily seeing the same people. And I don't know, maybe someone would go to, like, live in Tower 1 and go to Tower 2 because they have a better bakery or something. I don't know. But I still think you would run into people and have a better sense of, like, these are my neighbors and these are the people that live in my building. And
yeah.
I don't know. I've never lived in a high-rise like that. Maybe that's not true. Maybe everyone just ignores each other on the elevator. But I think that... But
I think that even if people do, it's not like we're accomplishing that right now.
Right.
So it's not like exactly. You go walk down the, I mean, there are some people, obviously I'm overgeneralizing. There are people right. that know their neighbors and are really good neighbors right. and that's wonderful. And I think that is about as good as you can do in a suburban American neighborhood is to really right. know your neighbors and take care of them. And they need tinfoil. You bring them tinfoil and they need,
right.
you know, two eggs. They only have, you know, they need three and they only have one kind of thing.
Right.
You give them and you, you know, take their mail and their packages when they're away and all that kind of stuff. That's like the classic American life, I guess. But I think generally speaking, not a whole lot of that is happening all the time.
Yeah.
And that doesn't go away when you move into a skyscraper situation. Right. That actually, I think, probably increases from what I've seen here in Charlotte and friends that I've had especially younger, like are around our age. There's a lot of community that exists in those skyscrapers. Right. That's where people find their friends and kind of, and I know that's not always true. And some people have really bad experiences and bad neighbors and all that kind of stuff. But I think generally speaking, it's not hurting. It can only help on the community piece.
And I think another, like I was thinking about this, we have some friends that are doing travel nursing right now. They're in town for the holidays before their next assignment. And they're actually staying with another couple at our church who are, they're all in their, you know, mid 20s. And so I've been going to their house a lot lately. And I mean, on Sunday afternoons, I've been there from like noon to midnight, you know, just goofing off, playing Mario Party or watching football or whatever. And it's really awesome because, like, I know that at least there's four people I really love that are going to be there. And then that kind of creates like a momentum where other people are like, oh, yes, I'll meet over there. And so, but then at the end of the night, it's 1 a.m. or whatever, you got to drive home. And it's like, oh, I stayed too late.
Yeah,
but you know, that could be instead you're just going down the elevator, you know,
right
to your house instead of driving 20 minutes or 30 minutes back home. I think it just makes it easier to be community and show up, and it's not this big, you know, like last night we had to cancel on a birthday party because Rachel just wasn't very comfortable getting out in the snow when the temperature was dropping that fast. And so we had to kind of, it was like a murder mystery and everyone's assigned a different character. And like, we just didn't show up, which I think probably screwed everything up. But it was because, you know, we didn't want to get stuck and so on and so forth. So I just think there's a lot of potential there. And, I think that also with like the boring company where they're boring, underground to, connect, you know, really busy places like in Las Vegas, they've been putting tunnels underneath the city for electric cars because they don't have emissions. You're going to, you know, suffocate down there.
Right.
I think you can connect those towers, you know, every 1,000-acre tower with like a tunnel system that, you know, gets everyone around really fast. And
yeah, that's the part that I was going to bring up, that it also, when you go more high density like that, it opens up more opportunities for public transportation that's effective.
Right, because
and actually useful.
Right. Your bus isn't going to go down every side street. It's only going to get you as close as the nearest, you know, major thoroughfare. And so then you're going to have to walk the rest of the way to your house.
But just and on an economics perspective, a city or a county or whatever isn't going to build a light rail system out to a neighborhood that isn't high density. So if you just say like, yeah, you just send it out to towers 1 through 5, and each one will have its own station, because that's, you know, of all the people that work downtown or that are going to ride this every day, you know, let's say we have 1,000 people living in each skyscraper, and, you know, 400 of them are going to ride the train every day. You're like, well, that's worth building something to come all the way out here. And then you eliminate all of the driving and all of the, all that kind of stuff.
So I think we can build a really beautiful world. And at that point, if you actually set up regenerative agriculture, I think what a lot of people don't think about is you're building something that is getting better.
Right.
Not just like holding the line and staying still. Like, it's getting better. And what that means is that as you go out into your 1,000-acre, you know, preserve that you live on, you're going to start seeing some, the soil is going to build. It's going to start holding more water. As it holds more water, it's going to regenerate the ground, you know, aquifers.
Uh-huh.
And then you're going to see springs start to pop up and flow year round on those properties. And you're going to see certain wildlife show up that you're like, I thought those were extinct. I didn't think those lived around here. You're like, well, they do. And on from there, I think you would see, you know, especially if it was built as a food forest, both for humans and for wildlife, where most 80% of things are fruiting, you know, either with nut, seed, or fruit. Right. Yeah, the wildlife is going to, you know, respond to that too. You're going to see some really cool stuff. And you know, on the Great Plains, I think you could see, you know, in this type of system, I think you could see some wildlife that were kind of afraid. Well, I think you see some life come back that we pushed off because our farms were spread out and everywhere. Let's just say an elephant lived in North America, we'd be like, yeah, we got to kill those because they are always breaking our fences and, you know, da-da-da-da. You know, we could live, I think we could live side by side with them a lot better if we lived in these. I think there'd be a small circle of not straight up forest, you know, around the high rise, but, you know, those would be for the agriculture and stuff. But I think if you packed that in and you did it really well, then you could have some really wild spaces really close to, it'd be like New York City with a jungle around it. You could have some really wild spaces that are also right next door.
Yeah.
And not threatening your way of life.
Right.
Necessarily.
And we can't even really describe what that might be like because we don't know. Like we can only really, like everything that we're saying right now is just kind of pretty good guesses of what it would be like from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And then who knows? Who knows how it would go from there? And who knows the kind of people that would end up moving into this tower and how they would help? And
here's another thing.
Because that's not, it's not that everyone that would move in would just be a drain on the light, because that's not how it is functioning. It's actually every person that moves in makes this place a better version of itself.
Exactly. And I think like the light, just think of every single house in Nashville and all the streetlights. When you fly in at night, all the streetlights.
So bright.
All the light pollution. It would go away if you took those 2,000 households and piled them into one with 1,000 acres around. I think we'd be able to see the stars again.
Yeah.
I think we'd be able to see, more beauty.
Yeah.
And the roof. Man,
put
the roof.
Some stuff on the roof. That's what I was going to say.
You have a cool thing going on up there where if we built it well, instead of just having, you know, HVAC unit up there and, you know, just a bunch of mechanical stuff, like that could also be a space that's really beautiful and wonderful and a place where people want to gather and be inspired. You're just looking out 50 stories, man. But instead of looking next door and looking at a wall of another 50-story building, you're looking out over, you see these other
towers, but they're far.
Towers, but they're every 1,000 acres or so. And you just can actually see. You see the sunset. You see all kinds of stuff. Like, if they just be beautiful, see the stars at night. I think it'd be a really cool place to live. Not cool. I think it'd be really like deep in your soul, satisfying.
Good. Yeah.
It'd be good.
Like, and I think that, I think that a lot of people would not, even including myself, I wouldn't even necessarily know what to call it, like what I'm feeling. I think it would just, like when I imagine that, it's just like the first thing that comes to my head is just like, like that's good.
Yeah. And I definitely
I don't know like what else to call it other than like that's just good. It is good. Like
I think there's a lot more people that would sign up for that program that would want, you know, to personally manage it, obviously.
Mm.
There's a lot of people I think it's like, hey, if you knew that everything you were doing was being you know, treated this way, used this way, your waste or trash, quote unquote, is being used this way. When you flush the toilet, it's being used this way.
And you don't have to do anything about it.
Nothing about it. No hands on. You. But like that is how this operation is run. Would you be proud of that? They'd be like, oh, that'd be awesome.
And the rent is $1,500 a month?
Like, yeah, it's like, oh, yeah, man, let's do it. And so I think, like you said, you probably could measure out, like when I put organic waste down the chute, I could probably beep in with my, you know, RFID, and it knows it's Nathan, and then it keeps, you know, that on the computer, like, you know, you just put this much, you know, compost down the chute. It'd be pretty cool, man. And just so
like you're now your electricity bill is, you know, or you got on your Peloton today for an hour, which is connected to the building,
right?
And you just produced, you know, one hot water kettle worth of electricity.
Electricity. So there could be all that too. So anyways, I think on 50 stories you could do parking without doing it on land and making everything look bad with the big parking lot. I think you can commercial stuff, whether that be for retail or for businesses that need office space, and then obviously all of your residential stuff. So I don't know, man. I think we need to be more efficient with the space, build more vertically, but instead of just building a bunch of those right next door to each other, spread them out and allow there to be land, built into that program that forms like this. It's like every tower would have its own huge city park.
Yeah.
That's being used. Yeah, sure, there'd be soccer fields and some, we'd give space for that stuff too,
right. But
it would be beautiful. And I don't know. I would love to see Nashville go that way instead of these developers coming in and on 300 acres putting in just ginormous buildings and stuff that are horizontal, like maybe a story or two tall,
right.
And just really crapping on the land and bulldozing and everything.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I wonder how much it would cost, the investment it would cost. Cause I think it could support itself fairly well.
Yeah.
To retrofit a 50 story building would suck. But if you built it that way and you had the foresight for that, I think people would be proud to live in it. And, I don't think it would be super complicated if all those systems were built into the program.
Yeah. I think the first trick would be, I think to pilot it, you would have to find 1,000 acres that's open to build on. And then eventually you just build enough of them. You can start knocking down houses,
right,
and replacing all of that with, like, the neighborhood of Madison could become Tower 7 or whatever.
Right.
And you just knock it all down and replant it all and with more focus on food forest type stuff.
Yeah. That'd be amazing. So that is my compromise to, all right, so not everyone wants the farm. We need more dense housing. Tennessee's losing, these undeveloped acres faster than any other state except for one. And it's a sad, sad thing to watch. And I wish we had a little bit more forward thinking about, let's just throw up another crappy house that's going to be, halfway falling down in 20 years.
Right.
10 years before the mortgage is paid off, this isn't going to be livable anymore.
Yeah.
That's,
I also think people underestimate just we've talked about this before, but just like what the space that you live and work in, like, teaches you or doesn't teach you, or how it helps you or doesn't help you. And I don't know, there's a part of me that's like, like, owning a house is like, I know that's a big accomplishment and that's really cool, and people should be proud of that, of being able to be like, this is my space, I get to influence how this space functions and how we host and all that. And that's a different conversation about how you use the space that you own. But if you said, and this is again hypothetical because you don't know until you build it, but just let's just build another house that's going to be just uninspiring, classic brick or wood siding house that we just like the people that buy it are excited about it, but then 2 years from now they're going to want to change this, and 2 years from then they're going to want to change this, and 2 years from then they're knocking down this wall. They're going to repaint the whole thing and all this stuff that's like, because you're working, in my opinion, it's because I think that you're working with a flawed object in the beginning that you got to keep changing it and moving the furniture around and all this kind of stuff because, you're messing with a flawed vessel. But instead it's like, hey, what if you moved into this giant wooden skyscraper? There's shades on all the windows in your room. In your apartment. And so you can get as much natural light as you want, super high ceilings. You can have as many plants in here as you want. We'll come take care of them. They actually grow outside, and when they're ready to plant, we offer them to people in the building. They can hang them in their house, and if it's flowers, when the flowers die, then we'll take them from you. We'll dry them out. We can use them for different stuff, and we'll just replace you with new flowers that we're growing. You can see down there on the forest, if you see in like section 4B, there's a whole thing of wildflowers growing, and that's what we're going to pick for you. Like, you know what I'm saying? Just like becomes a way more inspired place to function. And I think people, again, hypothetical, because we don't know until we build it, but I think people would become more creative. And I don't mean like everyone has to be a creative, but I think people, life will become more interesting just automatically because the space that they exist in every day, they spend the most time in, one is working for good constantly, two is really comfortable, and three is just beautiful, like naturally beautiful. And so every bit of what every human would do in that building, I think would be more creative. I think people would start picking up hobbies. They would start being in community more often with other people. They would start inventing things and writing songs and writing stories. And I just think it would happen. I think it's just, it's inevitable. But as we currently sit, it's like, man, I gotta work hard. I can't focus on the creative things because I gotta work hard to make this place stay afloat and pay all the bills in this building that constantly falls apart. And who knows if my HVAC system will go out this winter or this summer and I'll be totally out a ton of money, or who knows if, you know, they'll do some construction on a road and it'll change how my property drains water. And then my foundation will start to settle in a weird way because of the water running underneath my house, and we'll have to get that fixed. And you know what I mean? So it's like, I got to keep working because I might end up spending $100,000 over the 20 years I own this house just fixing it up. But instead you could say, move into this skyscraper. The rent is $2,000 a month, and everything is regenerative. Everything is working for you all the time. And just go do your job. And when you come home, just know that like everything's already taken care of. So anyway, I think that I know for some people that's like really dreamy and you're like, well, that's maybe not realistic, but I do think we don't know what would happen if people got to operate in a space that was that beautiful and that good, just good for your soul, just knowing right. That all of that is working for your good and for the good of everybody around you.
Yeah, I think that's the exciting thing about like, what would the crime be like? Like, it'd be a really interesting experiment of, like I said, when you build soil and when you build soul, like, you know, just like if you build the ground and the soil there, you know, what life is going to pop up? What new wild creature is going to show up because this thing has been repaired enough for it to exist in that space again. And I think if you build your soul in your heart and soul up, who knows what the human response will be to that.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying. And I think that's true. Like what would happen if we were living in an environment that was beautiful and holistic, and like we didn't have to constantly feel like us existing is like somehow killing the planet in a small way every day.
Right.
You know,
we watch a documentary about, you know, food supply chain issues and be like, not me, not here,
man. That's not my, it's like, yeah, I feel bad about that, but thankfully I'm not adding to that problem.
Yeah. I actually, yeah, like, I am given equipped with a solution.
Yeah. How does that make you feel, and how would that make you exist as a person? I think it'd be really interesting to,
and I think even just your normal work would become more meaningful in a lot of ways on a very simple level. Because instead of working for like making sure this place doesn't fall apart and this, that, and the other, you're like, I mean, I ate a lot of vegetables this month and drank a lot of coffee and I pooped a lot. And it's going to give me a credit that I actually think I've saved up my credits, and I don't think I have to pay my water bill this month.
Yeah. And you're like, there's like,
because I ate that many veggies. Like, I've just started eating a lot of fruit.
For going to the bathroom.
Yeah. And you're just like, yeah, man, like, good job.
You know how people don't want to like poop in public. They're just like, yeah. You know, these kids that like hold it all day so they can get home.
I got to do it at home, man. Yeah.
This is for a different reason, though. It's not just because of the comfort of your own home and feeling safe. It's because you got to donate to the cause.
Yeah, know? Man. I want that credit.
It's all for the cause.
Yeah. Yeah. Well.
So that's my experience coming out of the Tennessee Food Summit. There's also a bunch of other stuff. Had some great conversations, made some great contacts. I guess those are more on a personal level, trying to keep the church garden up and going.
Yeah.
And so I think we've made some great contacts. But there's also, you know, I'm really glad. I want to encourage everyone, if you feel like you are really convicted about minimalism, all right, well, and your whole family's like, I love just sitting on QVC every day and just buying trash. And you're like, okay, whatever. And you constantly feel alone with that stuff. Like, go to a meeting, go to a get together, go to some conference about minimalism. Like,
it'll be so uncomfortable until it's not.
Yeah. Like, what was super funny was that this, okay, so everyone in this room, let's say there's 500 people at the summit. And they're all like people that grow food, basically, in different scenarios, Nashville. Big and small, you know, but we're all growing food. We all love that subject. And the guy at the university we were at stands up and he's just like, yeah, I just want to tell you a little bit about our university. Not a lot of people know about us. You know, we actually been around for like 120 years, you know, and we started off this way. And we actually, you know, funny enough, we actually beat the University of Alabama in football a few years ago. And they made this joke about, you know, it was 100 years ago, like in 1901 or
right.
something.
Yeah.
But anyways, he was just like, he said, but before he told that whole story about football, he's like, we got any football fans in here? And like literally no one raised their hand or said anything. And it was just like,
wrong crowd, man.
Exactly.
Wrong
crowd. I was like, I am in a very different place right now, and I love it.
Yeah.
These are my people, for sure. It was so, I like football, but I wouldn't say I'm like a big fan. Like, I love getting together with people and, you know, having a thing to do together.
And you could totally ditch it if you needed to.
Oh, yeah. I'm not, like, it doesn't matter either way. But it was so funny, and that's when I was like, dude, if you were in, you know, our church building, and there were 500 people, it's like, got any football fans here? And everyone would be like, ah.
Yeah.
They were making, you know, Tennessee versus Alabama jokes or whatever. And so it was just, it's very encouraging to be around people that you don't have to convince to be excited about something you're excited about. I can't put into words how important that is, especially when you're at the edge of burnout or at the edge of like, maybe this isn't important anymore. Maybe this doesn't matter. To spend time with people, like I told Rachel, let's make a list of isms, you know, like, or ists. You know, where I'm an environmentalist, I'm a minimalist, I'm a permaculturalist, I'm a, you know, a gardener, whatever. Like, make the list of this and see if you can't spend more time around those gatherings of people and see what it's like. If you do find yourself alone with some of those, you know, things you're passionate about, you know, whether it's musicians or, you know, other podcasters or small business owners, whatever it is, like, go spend some time with them and realize where the conversation goes when you don't have to convince someone to care about something they don't care about.
Yeah. All the background, just like, yep, 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 yep. I'm with you. Oh, dude. Gotcha.
I just, like, these people that I'm so inspired by, I think I told you this story. There's this guy named Peyton I met, and he was actually the guy who works out at South Hall. I was talking to him and he's like, yeah, what kind of gardening are you doing? I told him I'm doing like a church garden and told him a little bit about that. He's like, so what's your kind of like approach to the gardening? I was like, well, this guy named Jean-Martin Fortier up in, you know, Quebec is this guy I really aspire to be like. He does it right, in my opinion. This other guy in Milwaukee named Will Allen that grows 1 million pounds of food on 3 acres. And he looks back at me and I've literally never had a conversation with anyone who ever knew who those people were. And instead of him being like, oh, yeah, I love their stuff, he looks back at me and be like, oh, I was an intern for Jean-Martin Fortier for a year. And I spent 6 months on the farm in Milwaukee with, you know, you're like, no, no.
It's like, not only does he get it, he like, he's was like, it.
I get it more than you do, believe me. And you're like, oh, dang, I just flipped the script. Like, the tables have been turned. Like, this dude's like, oh, I know him. He has my phone number, and like, we text every day.
Yeah.
And I was an intern for a year. So you're like, dang, let's talk, let's hang. Like, that's what's going to take you to the next level, not hanging out with people that you can't convince to care about permaculture.
Yeah.
Or whatever your thing is. So,
and that's not to just leave those people behind, but it can get really draining as someone in ministry.
Yeah.
It can be really draining to feel like, man, I just feel like I'm always trying to, like my job is to convince people that they need this. And then I go to something like, we're going to go to our youth ministry conference we go to here in 2 weeks or so. And it'll be just so refreshing. And not because like the classes are, you know, fine or whatever and all that, but like just to be around other people that are like, yeah, man, it's hard to convince people.
Yeah.
You know, like the people just to be like, man, I feel you. I'm in the same place.
And some people are in even worse situations than you are. And you realize, man, I should be thankful. Like, at least I got this going for me, you know?
And better. You see these people are like, I think one of the things that I heard you saying when we talked about your experience was being around people that, you know, you're like, you look at what they're doing and you're like, dang, like they're like sprinting with the ball. Like they're pushing the ball forward on so many things. Like, and they're just like, yeah, man, like, what are you doing? Like you're dragging your feet. Let's go.
Yeah.
And you're just like, whoa.
Yeah, it's
these
like,
people are intense.
Exactly. Sometimes you do the math on things and you see it from afar and you're like, I actually think that would work. And you do the math and you're like, I think that would work.
Yeah.
And then, but you've never seen anyone in your real life. It's just some YouTube video you watch.
Right.
It's very hard to be like, yeah, let's do it. And then you kind of get stuck at that. Am I actually going to do this? Like, is this actually a real thing that actually, and that's why I went to Milwaukee to see Will Allen's farm. It's like, it's right here. It's real. You know, am I going to live in denial or I'm going to, you know, try to do something I've never done before? So,
That's my encouragement. If you can surround, like if you brought up the minimalism thing, just use that as an example. If that's something that you're convicted about and you can find a group of people that are doing it, I think what you might realize is like some of the things you're like, man, I really am trying to like work up the courage or like the whatever, the oomph to like totally get rid of all this stuff and go to this, you know, try to do this thing. And you'll find people in that community that are just like, oh yeah, I did that like 5 years ago. Like, let's go. Come on. Like you can do it. I promise you can do it.
Yeah, it makes it more real. I think that's awesome. So that's my encouragement, guys. Like go hang out with your tribe more often. I'm not saying to stay with them all the time and never, you know, try to convince the next person that this is a good thing. But man, when you do feel like you're out there on your own, go spend time with people, you know, make your IST list.
Yeah.
And go spend time with those people because I think it can really re-inspire you and grow your imagination. Some people are out there doing stuff that you haven't even thought about yet. And you're like, dang, that's good.
Yeah.
So I think that's
we had that the other day with we want to build, you know, we talked about building a dome.
Yeah.
We saw like an Airbnb and we saw the inside of it and we're like, like that's it.
That's
it's just like the way that it's organized, you're just like, wow.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have even thought of that. So
yeah, exactly.
Keep chasing Jubilee, Freedom, Shalom, you guys. I hope this is encouraging to you. If it was, if you would share it with somebody, that would be great. There you go. That's how you can start your little community of like, man, this convicted me of some things.
Yeah.
But we hope that this is encouraging for you. And you know, maybe one day, if you just watch the news and there's a wooden skyscraper being built on 1,000 acres in Nashville, you might move there.
Yeah.
So just keep your eyes and ears open. Who knows?
Absolutely.
And if you're listening to this and you're like a rich real estate investor, we have a proposal for you.
Yeah, we do. Big proposal.
Yeah. All right. We love you guys. Thanks for listening. And we'll catch you next time.
All right. Peace.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. It would mean a lot and help a lot if you could like the podcast, hit the subscribe button, and comment on our episode.
Also, we would love to connect with you about all things Jubilee, Freedom, and Shalom. So message us on social media or send us an email.
And remember, if this has been good for you, don't listen to it alone. Find a church family, find a friend, listen together, have a conversation, and ask, if that's true, what do we do with that?
Thanks again for listening to our podcast where we talk about Jubilee, freedom, and shalom
all the time.